My name is Bruce Whitaker, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bruce.
Through the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found it impossible to drink since September the 5th, 1985, and I am really grateful for that. I think every once in a while we ought to read the long form of the traditions. I enjoy the hell out of that. So, I want to apologize. Thank you for having me today. I want to apologize for last month. My father-in-law died a couple, 3 weeks ago, and a month ago, on Saturday night, we got a phone call: get on an airplane as soon as you can. So my wife and I hot-footed it down to LAX to get our little selves to Rochester, Minnesota. And my father-in-law died a couple of weeks ago, and Jenny would be here, except she's still putting all of that stuff together. So she apologizes for taking me away from you last month, and for her not being here today. But family always comes first. I had my first drink. I was 11 years old. Me and another one of my running mates hung out front of a liquor store. Some yuppie guy bought us a six-pack of, if you're old, you remember Country Club. Just little 8-ounce cans. They were pretty, man. Gold and green. Said ale on them, so my mom didn't know that they were booze. She thought it was like ginger ale because my mom was gullible. And so the deal was we were going to drink three apiece, and we both drank two, and my lightweight roommate passed out, and I had committed to drinking three, so there was, if it took me till the next day, I was going to drink that third one, and I did. And this is how I know I was an alcoholic from the very first drink that I had. With him passed out and my commitment fulfilled, because I drunk my three, I drank the fourth one just because it was there. And I was going to drink everything I possibly could just because it was there until I couldn't do it anymore. Two miracles happened that night. The first one you're all familiar with is that thing that happens only to an alcoholic when we drink. It starts, you would think, in our throat. But for me, it didn't start in my throat. It started at the bottom of my feet. And it went all the way up through my body, and it just went, ugh. And that was going to happen to me every time I drank. That's why I did it. Because it just went, ugh. And it didn't matter what was going on. And that was the first time I had had that feeling. And I was going to chase that feeling just like the big book says. I was going to chase that feeling every single chance that I got. And I did. The next miracle that happened was when he woke up the next day, that little lightweight with his two beers, he felt like 5 miles of bad road. His hair hurt and his teeth itched and all that other stuff. He just felt like hell. And I felt great. And so here was something I could do better at least than him and not have to lie about it. Because my first obsession is to live a different life than I'm living. And I learned real young that you tell enough story to make it believable. And when the big book says you can't separate the real from the false, when Silkworth says that in the doctor's opinion, that was me. Now, if you're an alcoholic like me, you left an absolute nightmare in your wake, and you're going to get to make a number of amends. And this is how I know life as I remembered it is only as I remembered it. And I used to drink to blackout. I made amends to people that I didn't know amends to. But see, that's the way I remembered it. So whatever happened is only as I remembered it. And I've had to rewrite my past a number of times just because of the amends I had to make. You know, you go through all that whole thing and you make this call and you suck up the energy and you just know you're going to feel like an idiot having to rat yourself out to this person. And you get all done and they go, hey, dude, that wasn't me. And so two bad things have just happened. This guy knows a whole hell of a lot more than he really needs to know. And the fact is, it's somebody. And I thought it was him. So life is only as I remembered it. And so I had my first drink. I was 11. I had my last drink on September the 4th, 1985, 20 years later. From 1972 to 1985, I got arrested for drunk driving 11 times. I was convicted 6 times, 2 times... the case was thrown out because the police did a horrible job of gathering evidence. Twice in my early arrest career, they tried to get my attention by embarrassing me in public and reducing my charge to reckless driving. and one I beat in court. I went through three wives, six stepchildren, a child of my own. I can't tell you how much money, jobs, everything right down to my last shred of dignity. None of that makes me an alcoholic. All of that stuff I just described to somebody with a drinking problem. What makes me an alcoholic is very simple. I hear every once in a while somebody will say, you know, alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. No, it is not. Alcoholism is about as straightforward as it can get. It is an obsession to make things different, coupled with a physical allergy that manifests itself in the phenomenon for craving. Alcohol, according to the big book, is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Alcoholism is not. Alcoholism is pretty simple. If you drink, I like that sign. It's right out of the book. If when you honestly want to. Now, I never honestly wanted to. So I never tried to stop. I had no problems when I was drinking. That's why I drank. The problems were in those tiny little gray outs between drunks. When the monster that gets created by being driven by 100 forms of fear mixed in with a couple of shots of tequila, that monster in those little moments when I was starting to come into awareness, that's the monster that scared me. Now, he'll go away in a few minutes. Just take the top off the bottle, throw the top away because you're not going to need it. Turn the bottle upside down and wait. Not for long either. A few minutes, things are going to be different. Now, the chaos that I create doesn't matter to me. If you're staying sober today because you're afraid of what happens when you drink, you're going to have to drink again. Because a loving God that you'll find as you understand it by doing the steps will solve fear, but it won't work nearly as fast as Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels will cure fear in a New York minute. And while those things were happening to you, I'll speak for me, while they were happening to me, didn't scare me a bit. My 10th arrest did not prevent my 11th. And my 10th arrest was in front of the same judge as for arrests 8 and 9. And he was getting just a little worn out with my act. And as he's going page after page after page in my file, he looks up and he says, Mr. Whitaker, we're going to try to get your attention. My head said, shoot your best shot, pal, because you're going to ask for some time in a minute, and I don't have a whole hell of a lot going on anyway, so take all the time that you need. And you're going to want some money, and that's why I work, so I have money. I'm not excited about paying all of it in fines, but I have some, so whatever you've got to do, let's get to it. I've been several hours without a drink, and I need it. So do what you're going to do. Now, I didn't say that. Because early in my arrest career, I had shot my mouth off in court once, and all it got me was twice as much as he was going to sentence me to in the first place. It's like, if you're going to drink again, I'm going to give you a couple of advanced warnings. The first one is, if you ever find yourself in this situation, you come out of a blackout talking to a cop. Don't ask him, where am I? Just stay shut up for a few minutes. He'll tell you pretty quickly where you are and why you're there. Those kinds of things are just the price that we pay. It was the price I paid. I didn't mind. I have really modified my understanding of, quote, it's not working anymore. I've been sponsoring people for a long time. Here's the definition of it's not working. I can't get any relief anymore. If I can get 5 minutes worth of relief, 5 years a nightmare is a small price to pay. And so when I watch people come into Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a lot of talk going around these days about we've watered down Alcoholics Anonymous and this and that and the other thing. You know, my experience is of those that came to Alcoholics Anonymous, this is Alcoholics, that came and really tried in the old days, according to the second, forward to the second edition, half of them never drank again. See, I still think that happens. I think of the alcoholics that come to Alcoholics Anonymous and really try, take the steps, get a sponsor, study the book, do what it says, that half of them never drink again. Half of the half that go out, after a few fits and starts, they come back and they never drink again. Now, our recidivism rate today is 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous don't stay sober. But I'm under no illusion that 9 out of the 10 people that come to Alcoholics Anonymous are alcoholics. For an alcoholic, there's only one solution. Only one. He says it right before we get into the fourth step. He says, when this spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out physically and mentally. Not before. After. We have this pyramid so upside down. Well, get physically sober, I'll get my mind right, and then I can work on my spiritual condition. Well, not according to the book. According to the book, when the spiritual malady is overcome, that's when we straighten out physically and mentally. I just don't think most of the people in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in 2008 are alcoholics. I think there's a lot of drinking and drug problems that come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're not an alcoholic, I want to welcome you with open arms. We read the long form of it today. We don't refuse anybody. The coffee's no hotter for me than it is for an alcoholic. The people are no less friendly for me than they are for an alcoholic. We're a society that by our very nature discourages drugs and alcohol use. We do lots of fun stuff. I'm looking at these bulletin boards. There's stuff everywhere. We go places. We do things. We enjoy one another's company. We're significant contributors to society, and we don't drink. So if you've got a drinking problem, hang out with us. But if you're an alcoholic, there's only one solution. And it says in the 12th step what the solution is. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Not coincidentally. Not for some and not for others. And it doesn't say having had that spiritual awakening will never drink again. Because he says over and over and over in that book, the drinking is just a symptom. Now, it's a pretty obvious symptom. You know, and it's one we all have in common. And it's pretty easy to spot somebody that's got a drinking problem. You know, and it's actually pretty easy to spot an alcoholic. That's why Wilson spent so much time. If you look at the program of instruction, the way it's laid out, the first seven chapters are the program of instruction. The seventh chapter is entirely devoted to the 12th step. So it's really not part of the instruction. It's part of what we do now that we've had our spiritual awakening. So and that starts on page 103, or ends on page 103, starts on page 190, page 90. So from the forward to the first edition to page 90 are the first 11 steps. He says at the third step, where is that? Page 60. Being convinced we were at step 3. Being convinced of what? Obviously, being convinced of steps 1 and 2, which are the only two that aren't enumerated in the big book. Every other step, he says, we were now at step 3. Next, we launched on a program of vigorous action. Start to chapter 6, we're at step 5. He identifies 6 and 7, then he says, now we're at step 8 and 9. Then he says the 10th step, this is our 11th suggestion. We didn't say any of that about 1 and 2. Why? Because the first 60 pages are devoted to it. If you've ever gotten a chance to read the manuscript, read what Bill wrote right after the ABCs. If you are not convinced of the ABCs to this point, not convinced, you should reread the book to this point or throw it away. Because if you're not convinced, one of two things happen. You missed it, so reread it. Or it doesn't apply to you, so throw it away because the book isn't doing you any good. That's how important the understanding of alcoholism is. Alcoholism is not identified by how much we drink. You want to see First Liar Never Has a Chance? You thought it was bad in the bars? Sit around a group of people comparing their stories. In Alcoholics Anonymous, First Liar Never Has a Chance. My story's a lot worse than your story. oh, that's what you did. Well, you ought to hear this. First liar never has a chance. Who are we? We're a bunch of people that can't separate the real from the false. So, and that silliness about Alcoholics Anonymous is one drunk happening, talking to another. I'm sorry, one drunk talking to another's going on in every bar in America right this minute. That's not what Alcoholics Anonymous is. Alcoholics Anonymous is one person sharing recovery with another person. That's what it is. And in our first introduction to the fifth step, to the 12th step, he says, nothing will more ensure immunity against the first drink as intensive work with another alcoholic. Please, folks, don't substitute newcomer in there for other alcoholic. I've been sober a long time. I can't tell you how significant it's been in my sobriety when somebody with a couple of 3 weeks calls me, because we're all in this together. I don't want to live life on life's terms, because life on life's terms, Bruce gets drunk, falls down, makes an ass out of himself, and goes to jail. I have a 20-year history of that. That's life on life's terms. Through the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've lived life on God's terms for 22 and a half years. I ain't going back. I don't want life on life's terms. I don't want justice, because I can't ever pay back if I get justice. I'll take the mercy that I've been given. You know. So one of the things that was taught to me by the people that raised me in Alcoholics Anonymous, first, it is black and white. Everything is black and white. We read it in meetings in Southern California every day. We read it today. Half measures availed us nothing. Half measures will not avail you half results. Sorry, half measures avail us nothing. You're either all in or you're all out. My experience is, if you can't seem to stay sober, you were never in. Because if you're not all the way in, you are all the way out. And alcohol is so important to us. It is so important that every single thing of value will be gladly sacrificed for one more drink. That's how important it is. My daughter just turned, let me see if I can get this right, it's 26. She was 2. And her mother had just about run out of patience with me and said, you're either going to have to slow down on that drinking, or me and your daughter are going to have to go. Now, I would like to tell you that I knew what that meant. What I thought it meant was, she was going to run me out of the house for a little while till I got my act together, and then I could come back home. What it turned out to mean was, she was going to pick that little girl up, and she was going to hit the road. And I was not going to see that precious little 2-year-old for 14 years. I would like to tell you that if I'd have known that, I'd have said, okay, honey, I'll slow down. But the fact is, as soon as those words were out of her mouth, what went off in my head was, good, one less pain in the ass for me to deal with. And I gladly let that 2-year-old little angel go. Now, I got sober not too long after that, about a year and a half after that, and I'm all full of myself at 90 days sober, and I decide it's time for me to be back in that little angel's life. And so I went to one of the guys that I trusted that had been sober a while, and I mean, it just sounded like every coincidence there was. The last place I knew she was in Oklahoma. Well, he passed the bar exam in Oklahoma. Now, he was no longer admitted to the Oklahoma bar, but he knew most of the people that were. And he runs this whole thing down to me, and he pushes himself back from his chair, and he says, now, I've told you how we're going to do this, talking to you as Bob, your lawyer. Now let me talk to you as Bob, your friend in Alcoholics Anonymous, and tell you exactly what you're going to do. Is your phone number in the phone book? And I said, God, no, Bob, everybody in their goat is looking for me. He said, then tomorrow morning you put your phone number in the phone book and you keep it there. And yes, all those people that are looking for you are going to find you. We call that the 9th step. And you'll tell them the truth. And that'll be that. He said, but if your daughter ever does come looking for you It will be real easy to find you. All she'll have to do is dial 411. He said, then you're going to take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to do what you're told when you're told to do it, because we know where this train is going and you don't. Then you're going to let God do what God's going to do. And if she ever comes looking for you, you will be worth finding. 14 years later, messing around on the computer, she decides to look up her daddy in the white pages. You know how many Bruce Whitakers there were in the white pages in Ventura, California? One.
Wow.
She called her daddy and said, this is your daughter and we need to talk. And I got on an airplane and I flew to Oklahoma City, and after she gave me a big hug, she took my granddaughter back from her mother and handed her to me and said, this is your granddaughter. And we've been famously associated ever since. And can I give her back those 14 years, some of which were an absolute nightmare because her mother's a psycho. And here's how you know she was a psycho. She married me. Want to know if you've ever had any healthy people in your life? They're the ones that turned and ran. Said, I like you and everything, but I just can't go there, man. I'm out of here. I'm a bottom feeder, man. Got to be. I'm already the lower companion. So it's hard for me to find lower companions than that. That's my definition of how I knew it wasn't working anymore. My life circumstances were deteriorating faster than I could lower my standards. All of those things that I said I would never do, I was running out of those things. It was time to do something, you know. And I didn't know, first of all, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I was rooting for brain cancer. Because there was something wrong with me. And brain cancer would have been perfect. Because first of all, it would have been quick. You know, I wasn't going to have to put up with this shit for much longer. It also would have been sympathetic. And you'd have all felt so bad for me. Instead of hating even the shadow that I cast. You know what I mean? But most important, I wouldn't have had to quit drinking. I'd have had a perfect excuse. Oh, yeah, well, no wonder he's face down in the gutter. He's dying of brain cancer. And then you'd have all felt sorry for me. It would have been wonderful. Well, come to find out, that wasn't the problem at all. And I took those 20 questions. My first meeting was at a speaker meeting. My wife, who had kicked me out of the house, the only way she'd let me back in the house was if I went to a meeting. And merciful God, she took me to a speaker meeting so I could hide. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know where it is that newcomers get the sign that says I'm a newcomer. But oh my God, don't we have it? I'm new. You can see him for two blocks. We're trying to be so inconspicuous and all that stuff, and it doesn't work. Pushy bastards like you come up to us all. Hi, I'm Bob. I'm glad to meet you. You know, it's like, I'm not glad to meet you, pal. I got about an hour and a half of this shit, and I'm out of here. Can I get you a cup of coffee? You know, it's like, no, man. Can't you just leave me alone? And so at the break between the 10-minute speaker and the main speaker, I saw that 20 question thing, and I'm figuring this is my out. Because I've been to college, I know how to take tests, and if you get 50% on a test, you had done fail that test. So I'm real careful here, and I'm figuring every angle of these 20 questions, and lo and behold, only 10 of them are true. I mean, how stupid a question is alcohol affecting your reputation? How stupid a question is that? No, it's not affecting my reputation, bro. It is my reputation. That one doesn't count. So I only get 10 of them right, and I'm not the kind of person that reads all the way through something first. I just go, I only know two speeds, idle and floorboard, so if I'm going to take this test, I'm going to take it right now and get it over with. And when I turn that card over and it says, if you answered yes to three or more, it occurs to me I have misunderstood several of these questions. I better go retake this exam. Because I have no intention of quitting drinking. I have an intention of sleeping in my own bed for the first time in 2 weeks, and that's the only reason I'm even messing with this crap. And so this is how I know that the second step is the only one of the 12 that happens to you. And here's how I know. First of all, for some reason known only to God, I didn't drink Saturday night. I'd already gotten back in the house. It was too late by the time the meeting was over for my wife to send me back to Santa Barbara. So I'm in. I did all the things I'm supposed to, and I'm in. And I still didn't drink. And there was booze in the house because my wife was a drinker. What the hell else would she be doing with me? And I didn't drink the next day either. And long about noon, that directory of meetings in Ventura County that had so offended me that when I got home, I threw it clear across the room as soon as I walked in the door. Now I got to find it. And I scour around, and lo and behold, there's a meeting a couple of hours from now at some place I didn't even know where it was at 3 o'clock, and I could go to that. And I went to my first meeting on purpose. And I've been going to meetings on purpose ever since. And I still didn't drink. Now, I hadn't done any steps. I hadn't really participated in any meetings, but I had done something that is absolutely impossible for me. And I know that it's impossible because when I start studying the book, it says it's impossible. In italicized writing, it says it's impossible. It says there on page 24, for reasons yet obscure. We don't even know why. The alcoholic has lost the power of choice in drink. It's been a long time since I had a drink, and today, when I got up, I did not choose not to drink. I lost that power of choice in drink, and I have studied that book cover to cover. I teach a class on it every Tuesday night for the last 6 years. I still haven't found the place where it says I ever get it back. So the second step happened to me. I was returned to the sanity, restored to the sanity that prevents the first drink. Now, please don't confuse that with the sanity to make good decisions. Or the sanity to choose a mate properly. Or make good decisions about my employment or my children or any of that other crap. That comes later. But the sanity that prevents the first drink is what I was restored to, because there I was, sober, with no ability to choose that. Now, I was raised in the Episcopal Church. My parents did everything in their power to bludgeon me into sainthood. And I knew that that wasn't going to happen to me. Somehow, intuitively, I knew at 8 years old, all bets were off. And when you have already resigned your eternal soul to the nightmare of whatever's on the other side, how are you going to hurt me? I can only burn in hell forever once. You know? And I was already there. So do what you got to do, man. I only got so much time, and that's one thing I am not going to worry about. So when I start looking at all of this stuff, it doesn't take a whole lot of inspection or hearing the steps to hear that God thing come flying out there. And it's like, I was on scholarship to play baseball at a Catholic college, God in his sense of humor, and the men's athletic dorm was immediately adjacent to the largest Catholic church in San Diego County. Not one time in 4 years did I get past the threshold. That was on purpose. The University of San Diego wanted to finish the job my parents had started with their bludgeoning into sainthood. It took me all 4 years at USD to fulfill my religion and humanities requirements without taking one single class that was either taught by a priest or about Catholicism or Western religion. I was up to here with it. I didn't want anything to do with it. Some people would call that attitude a mite belligerent. But that's the attitude that I brought here. And I'll tell you, it's kind of a funny story how that got beaten out of me. I was a little over a year sober. One of my best friends that I'd made in Alcoholics Anonymous said, "You got to come with us to this retreat on Labor Day down in Malibu." And I'm thinking, a retreat in Malibu? How can that be bad? And I said, "So what's the deal, Bob?" And he says, "Well, it's a recovered alcoholic priest." And I said, "Stop right there." I said, "There can't be one word out of the mouth of a Catholic priest that I ever want to hear." And he said, he pointed me to that piece of the big book in the spiritual awakening right there. The surest way to everlasting ignorance is contempt prior to investigation. And Bob said, at least now I know where you're coming from. You have decided to be everlastingly ignorant. So if you ever ask me a question, I'll be able to answer you in some way that you can understand. Well, shit, I'm a people pleaser. You know, I came here having spent all kinds of money that I didn't have to buy all kinds of things I didn't want to impress all kinds of people I didn't even like. So I've still got a bad case of people pleaser. So I said, okay, I'll go. It never occurred to me that the crisis that was going on inside me about God as I understand him was tiny compared to someone that had given their entire life believing that they were in contemplation of and service to God, and they had to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to find a power greater than themselves. It never occurred to me. And I just went, okay, I get it. And so that was the end of the rebellion. You know, I grew up in the 60s. We don't just question authority, we question everything. And my first sponsor was one of those people that, you know, everything was two or three words at a time. And when I would be, like all newcomers, I suppose, and say, yeah, but I don't understand. And he would say, well, don't do it if you don't want to, but then you just have to get somebody else to be your sponsor. I mean, silly stuff, you know. When you put your shoes and socks on, do you put them on sock, sock, shoe, shoe, or sock, shoe, sock, shoe? David, I'm 31 years old. I got 2 college degrees. What do you ask me that juvenile shit for? He said, just answer the question. Sock, sock, shoe, shoe. He said, well, not tomorrow. Tomorrow, it's going to be sock, shoe, sock, shoe. And call me when you're done. So I called him, and the next day he said, so tell me, how did you do your brush your teeth first and then shower, or did you shower first and brush your teeth? Now, see, there's a tacit assumption that goes on there, and that is that I showered at all, because he assumed I had ascended to human being. That was not a valid assumption before I got here. I worked in the oil fields, man, 5 minutes on the platform, you couldn't tell if I showered yesterday or a month ago, so maybe I did and maybe I didn't. Let's see, Dave, brush teeth, take a shower. He said, not tomorrow. Tomorrow, shower first, brush your teeth. So we go through this silliness for about a week, and I see him at a meeting. He said, by the way, how are you going home? What do you mean, how am I going home? Straight down this street. This is where my apartment is. I said, well, not tonight. Tonight, you're going to go up here, you're going to turn there, turn there, turn, and all this, I mean, it's like 10 miles out of the way, right? And he followed me. So when I got in the parking lot, he pulled up and he said, I can't believe it. You're actually willing to take a little direction. And I said, okay, so tell me what all of this has been about. And he said, your brain is broken. He said, you've been making a series of decisions for yourself that have all been bad. It says in our book that until he can have a complete psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. Unless he can learn to think completely different than he has ever thought, there's very little hope of his recovery. So, you've started. And so that's what the deal was for me. I had to learn how to think differently. I had to learn that I'm powerless over alcohol when I drink it. And it's been a long time since I had a drink. I'm not threatened by a bottle of Jack Daniels. I have yet to see one come flying off the shelves and attack me. I have a healthy respect for what will happen to me if I drink it. But I also know that if my life ever deteriorates to where it was on September the 4th, 1985, I will use September the 4th, 1985 solution. Because I know today that it would work. And it would fix the thing that was broken then. It won't fix whatever gets broken today, but it would fix whatever was broken then. My life is unmanageable. It's still unmanageable. Now, if you looked at me from the outside, I have a garage full of cars. I just bought a new house a year ago. We're now into our second year of monstrous house payments. All of that other stuff. I have a good job. I'm really well respected in my community. All of that stuff. And the instant I start taking credit for it, I'm closer to a drink than at any moment in my life. The second part of the first step is more significant to me than it was the day I got sober. Because it's too easy to start to take credit for things that are not my responsibility. My responsibility is to be willing. The rest of it is God's responsibility. And every single thing that I'll let God deal with is handled flawlessly and to my maximum benefit. In order to get what I want, I have to give up everything God wants for me, and that's just too steep a price. I'm not willing to pay it. Every good thing that's happened to me since I got sober has happened while I was aimed at something else. All that has occurred is that my vision has gotten much wider. Instead of being completely focused on what a great event has to look like, I just show up. And we have a prayer for that. I'll get to it in just a second. Been restored to sanity. I told you about the second step. If you're sober 2 days, the second step has happened to you. It is obvious that God can intercede on my behalf even without my permission. You may not like that. You may be as angry about that as I was. My experience is the most overblown concept in Alcoholics Anonymous is that of acceptance, because God's going to have his way one way or the other. It's much easier to open your mouth and swallow than have it rammed down your throat. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. My will is everything I think. What's broken? My brain is broken. I can't fix it. Trying to fix my thinking is trying to fix the thing that's broken with the thing that broke it. Success rate, nippy at best. My life is everything I do. I hear all the time. I didn't want to go to the meeting, but here I am. Liar, you did too want to go to the meeting or you wouldn't be here. The first person we have to start telling the truth to is us. Okay? I'm here because this is where I want to be. I could be anywhere. I have the freedom to be anywhere doing anything I want. If you came here with the freedom to be anywhere doing anything you want, why did you come here in the first place? I came in here because I had no place else to go, man. And as a result of coming here, doing what was suggested, and staying here, I can go anywhere and do anything I want. I've always gotten exactly what I wanted. We read about it in our book. Our problems we think of our own making. Listen, whatever you got is what you asked for. Nobody's picking on you. You got exactly what you asked for. Now, maybe not in the exact details, but my problems are of my own making. The good news is, so are my unproblems. My unproblems for a very long time now have been of my own making, because I do the third step. Hey, Dad, this is all you got. Not a whole hell of a lot to work with. Do your best. And I'll just go where you tell me to go and see what happens. Because what's been happening when I went where I wanted to go was a nightmare. I don't want to revisit that nightmare ever. Ever. There was nothing there for me. Nothing. And if you came here and left something behind, you're going to have to go pick it up. Or you're going to have to resign yourself to the fact that whatever you left behind must not be worth having. Because you'll go back and get it. You know, I don't want any part of the past. Because one of two things is going to happen. I'm going to remember things that don't do me any good today. I'm going to remember what kind of a monster I can be. And I'm going to hold myself accountable today for behaviors of 20-some-odd years ago. That does me no good. Or I'm going to get selective recall, and I'm going to remember the 45 minutes out of 20 years when I really had a good time drinking and using. And that doesn't do me any good either. So I don't want to go back there. The hell with it. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Change the words a little bit. Made a searching and fearless inventory of our morals. That's our problem. It's not my priest's morals or my parents' morals or my coach's morals that cause me problems. It's my own morals. that I couldn't keep up with. Every single time I did something knowing damn good and well it was wrong, it ate at me because I have a conscience. If I was a sociopath, it wouldn't have bothered me, but it ate at me. And how does that eaten from the inside out, how does that go away? Jack Daniels, baby. That's the only way. Okay? That's the only way I can get from Monday to Tuesday living inside this skin in the world as it comes at me, because I'm a monster. And I know it. We all know it. When we get to that fear list, if this doesn't show up on your fear list, you're lying. I had a fear of being found out. Because if you knew me like I knew me, you wouldn't have anything to do with me. We all believe that about ourselves. Now, we were wrong. And here, talk about 180 degrees. Here, it's not in spite of who you were, driven by 100 forms of fear and a shooter of Jack Daniels. It's precisely because of it that you have value here. So why are you trying to run away from back then? It's back then that makes you valuable. You're going to tell your story, and somebody that thinks they're alone, isolated, and no one could ever have lived like that, you're just going to tell your story, and they're going to go, oh my God, I'm not the only one. It's not in spite, folks. It's absolutely because of. So put that stuff down. Write it down. Set yourself free. I ask this when we start the fourth step in my class. It takes us 7 weeks to get through the fourth step. It's that important. But the question I always ask, especially of those that haven't done a fourth step, how free do you want to be? And when do you want to be that free? And the answer that I get by actions, I don't care what your mouth says. I care what you do. By action, what I hear is, well, I don't want to be real free. And I damn sure don't want to be that free right now. I got things to do. When does an alcoholic first learn moderation? When they come to recovery. Did you save that last little bit out of that bottle of wine? No. Did you save a quarter of that little roach? No, you ate the damn thing. Did you save one more line for tomorrow? No. Do you want to go to one more meeting? Nope. Got shit to do. 3 meetings a week is a load. Oh, so you only got loaded a couple of days a week. Oh, no, man, I got loaded every day. But you only want to go to a couple of meetings a week. I get it. Okay. Have you started that four step? Oh, man. No. It's been 6 months, man. I'm just getting past the third step. You like the prison that you're in. Okay, far be it from me to deprive you of your misery. What kind of a friend would I be if I wanted to yank you out of the cage you've decided to live in? I wouldn't be much of a friend at all, would I? And that's what the steps are. You know, what are we afraid of? Do you know what we're afraid of? There's only two emotions. It's only two. Love and fear, that's it. If it's not love, it's fear. I don't care what name you put on it. The book says driven by 100 forms of fear. Could have said 1,000. Could have said 10,000. Could have told us the truth. Could have said one. But we wouldn't have believed it. Look what it says in the fifth step. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. Now let's get serious for a second. Which item of your past do you think you are about to make God aware of? That he wasn't pretty thoroughly checked out on already. Admitted to ourselves, newsflash newcomer, you were there. And if you were there in a blackout, you can't admit it because you didn't know about it anyway. So that lets you off the hook. But to another human being, uh-oh. See, there's the deal. Because if you knew me like I knew me, you wouldn't have anything to do with me. That's why 5 comes after 4. See? They're in order on purpose. I can't tell you this stuff until I've engaged in a fearless inventory, because I'm not completely convinced of it already. I am a consummate self-deceiver. I have lied to myself so much that I believe my own lies, or at least I can't tell which ones were lies and which ones were true. So until I engage in a serious effort to figure that out, I can't even rat myself out correctly. That's why five comes after four. And how can I engage in a fearless inventory if I haven't made a decision to turn the way I think over to God? So they're important. They're numbered on purpose. Six and seven is the most significant spiritual change you will ever undergo in your entire life. Step six in the big book is one giant paragraph. Now, I don't care how many pages of add-on bullshit Wilson figured he needed to write in the 12 and 12. In the big book, he told the truth in one paragraph. And what he said is significant. I'm now willing to have God remove all those things I find objectionable. Shall we go back a few pages and see what the root of our trouble is? The root of our trouble is not alcohol. The root of our trouble is selfishness and self-centeredness. So here we are at step six. All those things I find objectionable. If you feel a setup coming, you should. Because the very next paragraph, he says, "My Creator, I'm now willing that you have all of me, good and bad." Where's the judgment? It's gone. I have gone in the space of a paragraph from being self-centered, which is the root of my trouble, to God-centered, which is my only hope. Seven, I call 3A. Third step, my will and my life. 3A, all of me, Dad, good and bad. I'm done making the judgment. Guess what else I don't have to do if I don't have to judge me? I don't have to judge you anymore. Because I don't have to think of me in terms of you anymore. I can think of me in terms of God. This is all you got, pal. I'll go where you go. I'll do what you do. Whatever happens, happens. And I'm cool with it. Because you know better where this train is going than I do. And wherever you're taking it, I'm willing to go there. That's the seventh step. I'm on six and seven. I'm kind of taking a break. Bullshit. This is it. One step, instant, self-centered to God-centered. Above everything, we must be rid of this selfishness we muster. It kills us. Anybody not understand that? Kills us. This is it, six and seven. Step eight, made a list and became willing. The list is only part of it, boys and girls. The list you already had, though. How do you know? Because it says so. We already had the list. We made it when we did our fourth step. So if you're one of those sponsors that is out in the ether somewhere and says, let's build a bonfire and send our resentments up to God, make a copy. Otherwise, your sponsor's going to go right at the top of your resentment list because you're going to do it all over again. Became willing. Don't cop out here. Don't cop out here. Because God knows where this train is going and you don't. Just be willing. I can't tell you the people that have just popped up in my face that I hadn't seen in 15 years. There they are in front of me in the grocery store. Remember this or that. There's a grace, if you ever get to hear Karen Garrison, when she talks about a guy that she physically mutilated, a cop that she physically mutilated in her drunken idiocy. When she got sober, she tried to find this guy. Well, can you imagine what happens when you call the Toronto Police Department and say, I'm looking for one of your officers? Oh, they're real anxious to give you the number. 19 years later, she's sitting in an airplane on a tarmac. They're delayed. He's got a broken leg. Just being of service, she says, can I get you a cup of coffee? She walks up, gets the coffee, brings it back. And he says, thank you, Karen. She hasn't seen this guy in 20 years. She doesn't know him from Adam. And she says, I don't recognize you. He says, I know you don't, but I recognize you. And he ran it down to her, and she just started bawling. She'd been looking for this guy for 19 years. And there he was. They spent the 45 minutes on the tarmac, the whole flight. They correspond. See, that's why we do what we do. She's just trying to clean up the wreckage of her past. You know, it just goes on and on. It just goes on and on. So you don't know where this is going. I had to pay back a whole bunch of money. And it offended me at first. I got sober owing internal revenue, $82,000. Well, I didn't have $82,000. Because I hadn't gotten around to filing taxes for quite a while, and my sponsor made it abundantly clear to me that it wasn't my money they wanted. They wanted their money back, and I should give it to them. And I kind of fluffed that off and stuff, and I bought a jacket one day, and I was pretty proud of it, and I told Bill about it, and Bill said, did you call internal revenue and ask them if it was okay if you bought that jacket? I said, how's it any of their business? And he said, well, you spent their money to buy it. I said, okay, I get the message. Okay, one thing at a time. 9, 10, and 11 you're going to do for the rest of your life. Hopefully. Okay, I don't know how to pray. Read the book. If your sponsor doesn't know how to answer that by finding a place in the book, get another sponsor. Or maybe you need to handhold your sponsor through the book. We think we can offer some suggestions here. Problem with understanding that then? You know, I don't know how to do an inventory. We were usually as definite as this example. They wrote it down on purpose because it works. Okay? I really have a resentment. I should pray for them. Really? Maybe you should read the steps since it tells you exactly what to pray for, unless you don't understand the word only. That's what it says. Praying only for knowledge of his will for me. I don't know what God's will for you is, and it's none of my business. My wife contracted terminal cancer. Came back from UCLA. She hadn't been feeling bad. Came back from UCLA. The head of cancer research at UCLA had said, go home, get as comfortable as you possibly can for the little bit of time that you have left. That was in early February. She died in June. Not happily, I might add. Call my sponsor. I'm 5 years sober. We got sober 30 days apart. I said, I guess I should pray for her, Bill. And he said, really? Precisely what is it you think you're going to pray for? I said, well, that she doesn't suffer. And Bill said, that's none of your business. He said, so what are you going to do? Are you going to try to get God's attention to have him revisit a decision that he's made? Or are you about to inform him of something that you think God's not aware of yet? Either way, you arrogant bastard, that's your problem. Why don't you read the 11th step to me? And so I did, and he said, Bruce, the knowledge of God's will for you and the power to carry it out over the next 5 to 7 months is going to be a nightmare. You're going to need all the power that God can give you. You worry about what God's will for you is and let God and Judy make their own deal. See how easy this thing is? I mean, all we got to do is do it. All we have to do is do it. I can't ever catch up to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't. Because it just took a piece of useless human debris and turned me into a valuable human being. I can think of no nobler cause than what we're doing. If you go home tonight and pull out the dictionary and look up the dictionary definition of the word resurrection, and we just got finished with the Christian definition of resurrection, and I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes, because I don't mean to. But the dictionary says that resurrection is restored to usefulness. God has taken this piece of human debris and made me an instrument on varying levels of restoring another human being to usefulness. See, I can think of no more noble calling than that. And how I came to merit that, I will never understand. I don't know how I became an alcoholic, and I don't know how God has done with me what He has done with me. What I know is that I'm an alcoholic, that my life is unmanageable by me, and that if I will do as suggested, by the way, I know I'm running a little long. If you understand how Bill Wilson was educated around the turn of the 20th century, then you understand that when he says suggested, that is as strong a command as he can utter without cussing. Okay, it's not take it or leave it suggestion. That is as strong a command as Bill Wilson knew how to utter without swearing. It's very similar to that parachute instructor that suggests somewhere between the airplane and the ground you pull the ripcord. Pretty powerful suggestion that you are more than welcome to ignore at significant peril. Same thing. Then, as it says at the end of our book, if we see to it that our relationship with Him is right, not if we see to it that we go to a lot of meetings or have a lot of people that call us sponsor or any of that stuff, which is all good, and I hope you're as engaged in that as you possibly can be. If we see to it that our relationship with Him is right, then great events will come to pass. This is a fact. It's happened for me. I know it'll happen to you. Thanks.